Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Sabbath. Good to see everybody. Enjoying record low temperatures and now record high temperatures. Got outside the last 2 days. That was nice. Warm hello to everyone on the webcast as we are above freezing. Are these the end times? I don't know, but we are living in unprecedented times. We could have been born in the 1300s AD, near the end of the Middle Ages, would have been pretty stinky, right in the middle of the Black Death, the bubonic plague. But instead, we've been born into these very unprecedented times for humanity. The last century has been so incredibly unprecedented, unparalleled, unequaled, extraordinary. We've been on this earth 6,000 years as humans. The last 2% of man's time on earth this last century has been remarkable and without comparison, like nothing that has been on the earth before this. For centuries, we've wondered when Christ would return. For centuries, people have thought, how soon? Where are we in Bible prophecy? I'm going to tell you the exact day. Just kidding. You already knew I was kidding. Kidding, only kidding. We don't have the specific answer to discuss today. We know that only God knows the time of the return of Jesus. But understanding what's going to come in the future, the most important lesson of prophecy is how we live. Still, we're given many clues in the Bible about prophecy. There are milestones that give us a feel for how soon these things will be coming. Things we watch for, signs of the times that show us the leaves are changing colors. We can see writing on the wall. Now, Dr. Levy, many years ago, at least in my memory, gave a sermon about prerequisites before Jesus Christ could return. He went through a list of things that helped us see how close we could be. And that's what we're going to discuss today in this message. The Bible gives us interesting clues about what the world might be like when it is close to Jesus returning. Things that will be in place before anything can actually proceed any further. Because the times we are in right now truly are unique in history. So my title today is, Where Are We in Prophecy? That's the title. Where are we in prophecy? Now, I'm not an expert in Middle East politics or the state of the European Union or where the Ten Kings might be or the King of the North and the King of the South or the resurrections of the Roman Empire. We don't have those specifics yet. We don't. But as we're going to see, a lot of leaves are changing colors and we can see changes in the world. We know the major items of prophecy. We know them and their themes. They're going to be so big, it'll be like, oh, how could we miss them? So maybe it doesn't make sense rehearsing prophecy again because they're going to be so big. And who knows, it could be many more generations before Jesus returns. And like many have said, we have to live our lives as if Jesus was returning any second. But plan our lives as if he wasn't returning in our lifetimes. But still, there is one huge, compelling reason that we should review the state of our world against prophecy. And that reason is when these events start happening, the dominoes are going to fall in a matter of hours. There is so much evidence in the Bible that these events will come upon the earth so shockingly fast that it could easily be right around the corner. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians 5. Chapter that Mr. Eddie Foster was at, we'll be reading verses 1 through 4. 1 Thessalonians 5. Let's start in 1 Thessalonians 5, and we'll read verses 1 through 4. Paul is writing the Thessalonians here, obviously. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verses 1 through 4. This is concerning the times and the seasons. 1 Thessalonians 5, and we'll start reading in verse 1. He says, "But concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night." Verse 3, "For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape." Verse 4, "But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief." So if there's one thing that we've learned about the day of the Lord and the coming of Jesus and the tribulation, unless we are paying attention with God's Spirit to the changing winds, the coming storm, that this coming of the day could startle us along with everyone else on the earth. Because when these events start to take place, they will do so very fast. So then, we're watching. We are watching intently for certain things to occur. You know, we look for 10 kings. We look for the beast power. We look for sacrifices being restarted in Jerusalem. I'm just going to refer to Daniel 12. But Daniel 12 is a very prophetic scripture about end times. Daniel 12 and verse 11, I'll just refer to it. Daniel 12, 11 says that from the time the daily sacrifice ends, the tribulation 3.5 year countdown starts. When the daily sacrifice ends. This happened in the past, too, with Antiochus, who came into Jerusalem, but it will again in the end times happen the same way. There's some duality in prophecy. Just as the abomination of desolation was set up in Jerusalem back then, when the sacrifices ended, so it's going to happen again in the end times. And in order to end those sacrifices, they have to start again. So that's another thing that we watch for. But then there's the urgency of it. Just like as in ancient times, people fleeing Jerusalem, there will be a repeat of this event in the final end times, and the speed of the events and the urgency to flee will be very real. So let's go to Matthew 24. Matthew 24. And we'll read verses 15 through 20. Matthew 24, and we'll read verses 15 through 20. Now, prior to this section that we're going to read, before this, the tribulation is described in detail. Just how bad it's going to be for Christians. We'll actually get to that later in the message. But right now, we're going to read verses 15 through 20. It starts with, "Therefore..." So because of the tribulation, therefore, Matthew 24, 15, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, just like it happened in the earlier Daniel scripture, it will again in the end times." Verse 15 goes on, "Whoever reads, let him understand." Verse 16, "Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house." 18, "And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days." Verse 20, "And pray your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath." End time prophecy. Just like in history, when the abomination of desolation was in Jerusalem and people had to flee the sudden tribulation, this is going to occur again. And it will be critical. We drop everything and go when it occurs. It again speaks to how fast these events will go once they start falling into place. Now, urgency that we can have can come with perspective. So for part of this message, let's review a little history of mankind on earth just to give ourselves a better perspective of where we are in the grand scheme of things. The more we understand how unique and unprecedented the times are that we are living in now, perhaps the more urgent and more immediate these events might feel, the more prepared we'll be to drop everything. Mr. Zimmerman, if you want to get the slide up for us. Now, after this review of history, we'll get into those prerequisite prophecy scriptures. But first, let's just go through a review of history. Hopefully, this will be enjoyable. So on the slide here, I've tried to color code it. Mankind has been on this earth 6,000 years. 4,000 years before Jesus, 2,000 years after Jesus. The first 1,500 years, that blue strip up there, Adam until the flood at the left side up there, God's first attempt with humanity, 1,500 years pass. The next 500 years, the red stripe, the flood to Abraham. Again, these are rough, but pretty close. Flood to Abraham. The next 500 years, that yellow strip, Jacob or Abraham until the Exodus. The next 500 years, Moses through the judges, that green strip. Then the kings of Israel come along, the orange strip up there, 500 years from King David until the captivity. These are 5-century blocks of time, hundreds of years that go by. And then lastly, you know, the Persian and Greek empires, that light blue strip up there before Christ's return, this is from Ezra and the order to return to Jerusalem and rebuild Jerusalem to the time that Jesus comes. That 4,000 years until Jesus. Now, all the while, no electricity, no phones. They used fire, sailed boats, and they used tools. 4,000 years. Now, we know in King David's time, the nation of Israel was actually very big. There was advancement among humans during this time. We went from stone to bronze to iron, but very few other things changed among the human race during this time. Then after Jesus, you know, Jesus coming was a very big watershed event, but then his impact in that first century church, you know, is really just that black strip up there, that 100-year period is all that was. Because after Jesus comes that other yellow, that orange strip, the Roman Empire, the Western Roman Empire for 500 years, the birth of false Christianity, the state religion of the Roman Empire, and the Catholic Church on earth in that 500-year block, and then this giant 1,000-year green space of the Middle Ages, when the fall of the Western Roman Empire goes through the Crusades to the end of the Eastern Roman Empire, that huge green block, the Middle Ages. Again, fire, boats, tools, iron, the same. But there was also a lot of Catholic Pope history during that time. Some difficult times for true Christians in that long period of time. So this graphic is showing those 4,000 years before Jesus, and then so far 1,500 years after Jesus Christ. And that watershed event of Jesus coming and the first century church, that black strip up there. But then really that 1,500 years after went dark for a lot of Christians on earth. So then we get to that yellow strip up there on the far right. Some crazy stuff started to happen around 1500 AD. William Tyndale and his translation of the Bible into English. The Gutenberg printing press that makes books now. Mass production of the King James Bible. And that yellow block is 300 years of English colonialism and Bibles spreading across the globe. And you see those last two lines on the table? The red stripe and the blue stripe. Last two lines on the table. The red is the Industrial Revolution. And then that blue one is the 20th century, the last 100 years compared to the rest of our time on earth. Massive changes in that Industrial Revolution on a world scale are taking place in the 1800s, that red strip. The USA is born. Manasseh, trains are invented. Electricity is invented. Radios, which plays into the church. Telephone, steel, planes. All in that 100-year red strip up there. So we've gone from fire, boats, iron, to cars, trains, planes, radio, electric. Herbert W. Armstrong, founder of our modern-day church, was born in 1892 at the end of that red strip, right in the middle of all of this invention. And now the last blue line, the 20th century, the last 120 years, 2% of man's time on earth. Mankind really goes off of its wheels. If you don't mind going to the next slide, Mr. Zimmerman. I apologize if there's too much information and it's hard to read and see, but I have a few copies if you'd like to see afterwards. In the 1900s, stuff changes even more quickly and more drastically. The world was changing fast. So the left side is 1900 to 1950, the middle side is 1950 to 1990, and then the right side is the last 30 years. In the beginning of the 1900s, the first half brought two world wars, including an attempted extermination of the Jews. And right in the middle of those two wars, and in the middle of the Great Depression in 1933, Herbert Armstrong starts the Radio Church of God, that green strip up there. The wars of the red and orange strips, but the green strip right in the middle of the Great Depression, the yellow Great Depression, is where the Radio Church of God starts. It really wasn't possible until radio was invented, and he was then able to connect with millions of people. And then there's the black strip up there at the end of World War II, atomic bombs, which had never been around before. And then at the end of that, that blue strip right next to the atomic bombs, Israel is becoming a nation again. Like 2,000 years after they have been a nation, Israel becomes a nation again. So that's that first block on the left. Then in the middle block, we're going to the moon. Humanity goes to the moon. We send astronauts into space, walk on the moon. DNA is discovered. The abortion pill up there is discovered or invented. And we have the civil rights movements. The Radio Church of God becomes Worldwide Church of God right around the same time as we go to the moon. We had a peak of 100,000 members at one time in Worldwide Church of God under Mr. Armstrong. But then at the end of this block of time in 1986, Mr. Armstrong dies. Now we come to this third section at the far right. From 1990 on, our modern history. And with it, we have proliferation of technology, communication. The internet is born in 91 and 92, the first blue strips at that side of the chart. Mobile cell phones start to take off as well. The European Union is formed in 93, that orange strip at the far left, at far right up there. I mean, that could be a precursor to a united European group. And then in 95, we have UCG that began when Worldwide Church of God completely abandoned all of their beliefs, the green strip up there. This is the age of Google now, the age of cloning embryos. And then by the year 2000, a blue strip up there near 9/11, we have cell phones with mobile broadband internet. The internet at our fingertips worldwide. All of that in just a decade, from 90 to 2000, we have this new technology doing things. And then it just intensifies from 2000 to 2010. The International Space Station, we have 9/11. Facebook is born in 2004 and 2006, and now, today, is connecting billions of people now, when just a few years ago it was barely started. We have the start of our current organization in 2010. And then in yellow up there, our last decade, the last decade, we have political polarization in this country like we haven't had before. We have shootings, the media at least discussing them all the time. And then we obviously have the LGBTQ movement and gender movements now of the past 10 years, which is brand new. And then COVID. And then in our most recent history, Russia invading Ukraine, which has caused some shifts in political decisions in the EU about potentially investing in a standing army to be reliant. Who knows how the next 20 years will go? We don't know. Maybe we won't get to 20 years. Who knows? We could, though. Now, remember, this graphic up here is only the last sliver of time on the first chart. It's only the last sliver of time from 1900 on. We've just accelerated. 2% of man's time on Earth has been like no other. And then the last 30 years, exponential growth in all of these different things. Now, with this review of kind of where we are in history, hopefully for a little more perspective, let's look at prerequisites of prophecy for more, maybe urgency on it. So let's go over to Matthew 24. I think we're already there. Let's go to verses 21 through 22. And Mr. Zimmerman, you can remove the slide for now. Matthew 24. And we'll read verses 21 through 22. Let's see. So let's discuss now the tribulation and our first prerequisite, for our first prophecy prerequisite. Matthew 24 and 20, verse 21. For then there will be great tribulation, such as not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. This is the first prerequisite for the message. Unless the days of the tribulation were shortened, no flesh would be saved. Now, from the beginning until 99% of man's time on earth, man couldn't really destroy the earth or destroy themselves on a massive scale. Enter the 20th century, world wars, genocide of the Jews, and atomic bombs now. Our current nuclear weapons are 100 times more powerful than in Hiroshima. There are 4,500 cities on Earth. There are 15,000 nuclear weapons currently. It only takes 3 to destroy a city. We could destroy every single city. Now, in one sense, the beast power, at least in our minds, we can consider the beast power is going to be this one world government. And we think there's going to be times of this carnal joy on Earth during the tribulation. But there is going to be constant conflict and Satan's destructive influence, even in this utopia of Babylon that they have. But it's really not going to be a utopia as the beast and the false prophet are going to say it's going to be. While yes, it's going to be most dangerous for true Christians on the earth during the tribulation for us. Matthew 24:22 says that unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. Now, it's hard to know for sure the exact intent of the Bible here, but it seems to indicate that this is all flesh, that no flesh would be saved. There's going to be a tribulation for all mankind during this time. Yes, there will be the mark in order to do business. And yes, the world would be doing great carnal things, the merchandise of Babylon. However, we should consider that a lot of this will be a trick facade, that this one world idolatrous utopia is not going to be peaceful. That's Satan's trick, possibly. There is going to be tribulation. Man is going to be self-destructive during this time. Can't be fooled into thinking it's going to be a utopia. Let's read a little bit more in Matthew 24. Let's read verses 9 through 14. just to get a taste of what this will be like. Matthew 24, verses 9 through 14 says, "Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you. You will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. Many false prophets will rise up and deceive many." Verse 12, "And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will wax cold, will grow cold." Verse 13, "But he who endures to the end will be saved, and the gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come." I think it's not just going to be us that are hated in the tribulation. Many will be offended, many will betray and hate, lawlessness will abound, love of many will grow cold. No wonder this time will have to be cut short by God. While some of us may be protected during the tribulation, the world will be in upheaval, but the gospel will go out. Satan's goal is not for man to live in a utopia of peace. There won't be peace. It's to use this trick facade to have man destroy itself. Why it has to be cut short. So that is, for this message, our first prerequisite met. Unless the days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. I believe we meet the prerequisite in just the most recent 1% of man's time on earth. With our nuclear weapons and advanced biotech now, it wouldn't be hard for man to wipe themselves out in conflict now. But even so, the gospel will be preached. So that's our first prerequisite. Before we get to the next prerequisite, here's a side point a little bit about the gospel being preached. A side point. We won't turn here, but Amos 8 and 11. Amos chapter 8 and verse 11. I'll just read it to us. Amos 8, 11 is also prophetic, and it says, "Behold, the days are coming that I will send a famine on the land, not of famine of bread nor water, but of hearing the words of the Lord." Now we know that in order for several prophecies, like the one of sacrifices, to be stopped in Jerusalem, they have to start first. So likewise, while the gospel will be preached during the tribulation by the two witnesses, and while we continue to preach the gospel now as a church, there is coming a time when hearing the words of the Lord will be ended. We don't know the details, but we can ask the question, will there be a time when the world silences true Christians before the tribulation starts? And then the two witnesses during the tribulation, they restart this preaching that hadn't been able to be done for a very long time. Is it possible? Maybe. We just don't know. But it's interesting to think about. Okay, let's go to our second prerequisite. Let's go to Daniel 12 and verse 4. Let's go to that prophetic scripture in Daniel. Daniel 12. And verse 4. Now, Daniel 12 is the prophecy of the great tribulation. But then Daniel 12, 4, for our next prerequisite. And it just says simply, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase." Now, I admit, this scripture is kind of vague. People traveling and increasing in knowledge isn't maybe a strong prerequisite at first glance, but it helps to realize how this really was not the case until very recently. We can make an easy correlation to our world today. In the recent 100 years, 2% of man's time on earth, the ability to go to and fro, to travel, to increase in knowledge, the internet being invented, putting infinite information at our disposal, the ability to get any place on earth in hours now, the ability for technology to bridge language barriers now. This can't be more true than it is today. Although it could be even more true as the years progress. Even in 1933, when Radio Church of God started, people could barely travel then. People barely had access to information at all, just what they heard on the radio then. But by the end of the 1900s, by 2000, knowledge has just skyrocketed, even in our most recent history. In less than 30 years, the last 0.5% of man's time on earth, we have the internet with access to everything. We have supercomputers working on quantum mechanics, which I don't understand. We have Hadron colliders trying to reproduce what might have happened on an atomic level in the creation. These are things that man is playing with. Information and access to it has skyrocketed. There are 800 million videos on YouTube. Average video is 12 minutes, so there's 156 million hours of information on YouTube, 17,800 years worth. Every minute, there's 500 hours of new video information uploaded. It would take 82 years to watch all the info uploaded every hour. Just how much information is just increasing right now. And now we're talking about artificial intelligence, brain implants that will communicate directly with data, with the internet. Imagine having access to the internet at the speed of thought in our brains. That is the goal right now. Language barriers have been crushed by technology. The world is smaller. In my mind, knowledge increasing is prerequisite met. Let's go to Genesis 11. Let's go to Genesis 11. We can draw a parallel to a story in Genesis. At least ask ourselves the question, is it like it was then? In Genesis 11, let's read verses 4 through 7. Genesis 11, verses 4 through 7. This is related to the Tower of Babel. Genesis 11, and we'll read verses 4 through 7. And they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city, and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth." Verse 5, "But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. The Lord said, 'Indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language. And this is what they begin to do. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them.'" Verse 7, "Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." Just like Babel had one language, and nothing would be held back from mankind accomplishing their goals, are we there today? How much more will it increase? We don't know. How much closer to manipulating and abusing life will our knowledge of man's knowledge get to until it maybe goes too far and ushers in the end times? We don't know. But we can see we've been born into an age that is eons beyond every century previous. So this is our second prerequisite. Many will go to and fro and knowledge will increase. It has been only the last 0.5% that people are able to travel so easily and that knowledge access has skyrocketed. And look at what it's done to our society. Many people connected only digitally now, like mind-numb internet drones. Here's a slight side point before we get to our third prerequisite on this topic of today's world and technology. While it has brought benefits to humankind, technology and information, we are now dealing with each other a lot of times in a much shallower way than we used to, all being plugged in digitally. Can we just imagine what kind of non-human would be created if we had brain implants that gave us instant access to all of this information? It's not even possible in my mind. Science fiction movies, for me, have an ounce of truth to them and what they can think up of. That's man's dreams. But lawlessness, yes, will abound. And that's going to be the main reason love will wax cold. But there's also this natural conscience that was built into humans. In the human spirit, a natural kindness conscience that I think mankind had more of before all of this knowledge skyrocketing. Now, digital relationships can be making us lose a lot of empathy towards one another when we're not connected physically or in person as much. Now, that side point is over. Let's get to our third prerequisite. Third prerequisite. As we covered earlier, the two witnesses will preach the gospel for 3.5 years during the tribulation. There's an element to their situation we can pull clues from. When the two witnesses are killed, those of all peoples, tribes, tongues, nations will see them. Let's go to Revelation 11. Let's go to Revelation 11, and we'll read verses 7 through 10. It's our third and final prerequisite. Revelation 11, and we'll read verses 7 through 10. This is describing the two witnesses who will be preaching during the tribulation. Revelation 11, 7. When they finish their testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit will make war against them, overcome them, and kill them. Verse 8, and their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom in Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. Verse 9, then those from the peoples, tribes, tongues, and nations will see their dead bodies 3.5 days and not allow their dead bodies to be put in a grave. Verse 10, and then those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them. Make merry, send gifts to one another, because these two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth. When the two witnesses are preaching the gospel, everyone on earth will be able to receive their message. When they are killed, people of the entire world will see their bodies, will rejoice over them due to it. Now, this could be miraculous, potentially, for everyone to see. But thinking practically, in 1990, this was not possible. But in just the last 20 years, we not only have the internet, but we also have smartphones with mobile broadband come along. Only 0.5% of man's time on Earth could this be possible, practically speaking. 2 decades ago, when I was 20, we were just getting used to internet in our homes. Cellular phones could reach people remotely, but there was no data plans, no smartphones yet. But then in 20 years, we've gone the opposite, where now billions of people are connected instantly, digitally, and you can see the other person. Right now, 95% of people on the earth have mobile broadband coverage access. Roughly 7.5 billion out of 8 billion who are on the earth have mobile broadband signal available now. Now, admittedly, only 2/3 of people have actual access to the internet because it costs a lot of money. But the UN is planning to fix all that by 2050, overcome the cost barriers. Even in the most poorest locations, everyone's goal on earth is to give all people access to the internet and to social media. That would allow all peoples of all nations and tongues to see the gospel being preached. And COVID accelerated that drastically. So that 2050 is probably a much more conservative estimate. All those people will be able to see the gospel being preached, as tormented they would be, and then see the witnesses dead at the end of the tribulation. In my mind, third prerequisite met: mobile internet video. So we've covered these three prerequisites for Jesus to return, ones that we could argue have been met. This time we're living in right now is unprecedented across the history of man on earth. We couldn't have been born into any other time period, into the middle of that thousand-year Middle Ages where really nothing was happening. But instead, we've come in this incredibly unique time, an age of information, proliferation, and this really was spurred on by that last yellow slide, or the, forgive me, the proliferation of Bibles and the Israelite nations spreading across the globe, just ushered in the Industrial Revolution. We've been born into this age where, I'll just review the three prerequisites. Mankind could obliterate itself at any time. Days of tribulation must be shortened, or no flesh could be saved. Two, people can go to and fro, knowledge increasing to such a staggering level, and those language barriers being obliterated, how much more will we increase? And then third, global communications, enabling even in the remotest regions to see internet communication. Now, these are not the only prerequisites for prophecy in the end times. They're not. But it shows how unique an end time this is. There are still many other prerequisites that are not met yet. Things that we must still watch for. The big ones, for sure, the King of the North and the South, battles in the Middle East, there's the European Union and the formation of the Ten Kings, the abomination of desolation and sacrifices being reinstated. These are things that we can watch for. Those are the big ones. Because it's really only been a short time since the European Union has been in place. Just a short time. Just think about how Israel had not been a recognized nation for like 2,000 years, and then right alongside the world wars, the start of our modern-day church, and all these inventions and advancements, there was that attempt to exterminate the Jews, and then Israel still becomes a nation after that in our modern church age. Let's make one more side point, and then we'll get back to the topic of urgency and the purpose of the review today. Now, this side point, we know the first four seals of Revelation: religious deception, war, famines, diseases, death. Now, we know those themes have been occurring on a small scale through the history of man. You know, there's always war, there's always these things, but as Jesus warns, we can't be deceived to think that the time has arrived yet. Right now, we only have the beginning of sorrows. The end is not yet. We have to remember those seals carry a real huge impact when they do happen. In that 1/4 of humanity is killed in those coming seals. That's about 2 billion people, so there is more to come. These are things we can watch for and remember that will help us know if it's really the end or not. We are living in such a unique time on earth. This is where I'd like to go for the remainder of our time. What does that do for our urgency? Considering the age that we live in, what does that do for our urgency? Let's go to Mark 13. How does that help us with our urgency and what we're trying to accomplish, which is doing the work and our conversion? Let's go to Mark 13 and verses 28 and 29. Mark 13, and we'll read verses 28 and 29. He tells us to learn this parable from the fig tree. Just two verses. Learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see these things happening, know that it is near, at the doors. We know that no man knows the day or hour of Jesus' return, but there are these signs of seasons changing and these alerts to these prerequisites and imminent changes. And these prerequisites we cover today are one sign that we could be close. So that's a point of this message, the urgency we should have due to these unprecedented times that we're living in. It's because when we see these changing colors of the seasons, the end times will happen fast. It will be quick, very near. Know that the time of the end will be very near at the doors when you see those leaves falling, when summer is near. The dominoes will fall in hours. The world's going to be taken completely by surprise on several things. And if we're not watching for the same indications, or if we're not watching for specific things, we could be caught by surprise as well. We saw earlier, the coming of the days is going to be like a thief. It's going to be shocking. So let's go to Matthew 24 again. Let's go back to Matthew 24 and this time read verses 36 through 39. Matthew 24, and we'll read verses 36 through 39. Just to review a little bit more. Matthew 24, and we'll read verses 36 through 39. But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away. So also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Again, we don't know the day or the hour, but note that just as the days of Noah were, so also will it be here for those on the earth. Most of the earth is going to be marrying and eating and drinking, and then the day of the Lord will be fast, quick. It will shock them. But we need to differentiate a little bit between us and the rest of the world. The world won't really be shocked until Jesus' actual return. The world, which has been through 3.5 years of their Babylon, of their tribulation, they're going to be shocked at the coming of Jesus, at the trumpet plagues. But the warnings for us about these events coming as thieves in the night and to be prepared for Jesus' return, this is more referring to the time that the tribulation starts for us, when we're supposed to drop everything and flee, as it discusses in Matthew 24. Our shock will be that start of the tribulation, when the stopping of the sacrifices, the abomination of desolation being set up. So we watch for sacrifices starting again for those kings of the north and south. And then we're prepared to just drop everything and run when we see the start of the tribulation. But the world, they'll be shocked 3.5 years later when their Babylon is ending. Let's go back to our image from earlier, the first one. 6,000 years of man on earth. If you don't mind bringing up the image again, Mr. Zimmerman, the first one. 6,000 years of man on earth. 4,000 before Jesus, the patriarchs, all those events that were for our spiritual growth and recorded for us. Jesus coming, this watershed event. Even though it was that 100-year blip on the map, it permeates everything in our world. Jesus has this huge impact in this world, even if most people don't really know God yet. But then those 1,500 years after Jesus and the false church and the Roman Empire, being born into any of those times, there'd be so many unfulfilled prophecies waiting to happen, prerequisites not met. But then in 1,500, Bibles started being printed. Israelite nations were blessed and spread and expanded. Ephraim and Manasseh led the Industrial Revolution. All this technology we see today was invented and is being used now in this last 1% of man's time on earth today. So in conclusion, the last sliver of that blue strip the last 0.5%, more critical prerequisites have been met. So what do we do with this info that we've seen today? What can this perspective do for us more than just more history knowledge? Let's go to Matthew 24 and verse 45. One more scripture, and then we'll conclude. One more scripture, Matthew 24 and verse 45. It can give us motivation to be prepared. To be prepared. And to remember that we have a job while we're here. Matthew 24 and verses 45 through 51 to conclude. Matthew 24, and we'll read 45 through 51. It says, "Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season?" Verse 46. "Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes," when Jesus returns, "will find so doing. Assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant says in his heart, 'My master is delaying his coming,' and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him, and an hour he is not aware." Verse 51, "And will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites." As the verses tell us before this section, we're to watch and be ready, because the return of Jesus is in an hour we don't expect. For us as Christians, again, this is more referring to that beginning of the tribulation for us. We're servants of God. Jesus put in his church and in his household until his return. Blessed are we if Jesus finds us doing his will when all of this starts. We have this job to do now. If we don't realize how unprecedented these times are that we're living in, how at the door some things could be, we could allow that worldly dissipation into our lives. And then the quick start of this end could surprise us like the rest of the world. So let's watch ever more urgently and keep doing the work.